The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today is Thursday, November 21st. We're down to the last couple of witnesses in the impeachment investigation. What to know about it today? And another rare moment for the royal family. Plus, Uber's plans to record during a ride, PayPal's biggest purchase, and an outburst of shooting stars. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Know Thursday's bonus interview, what research says about tough conversations with family. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. He's been called the most anticipated witness in the impeachment inquiry into President Trump because he's had direct contact with the president about Ukraine. And we've now heard his testimony. So let's go through a few of the key things that he said yesterday and a couple of the key arguments we heard from both Democrats and Republicans during the hearing. So first of all, we're talking about Gordon Sondland. He's the U.S. ambassador to the European Union, but he was also involved in Ukraine relations. And it's important to note that unlike other witnesses, he's not a longtime Foreign Service official. That instead, he was appointed by Trump and before that was a Trump donor. He gave $1 million to Trump's inauguration committee. But in his opening statement under oath yesterday, he flat out said, yes, there was a quid pro quo, and it was at the express direction of President Trump. Remember, quid pro quo means this for that. I'll only do this if you do that. Well, Sondland said the Ukrainian president would not get a White House meeting or call unless he announced the investigations President Trump wanted. He later said he believed $400 million in military aid to Ukraine was also linked to the announcement of investigations that he later learned could make Trump's political rivals, like the Bidens, look bad. Sondland also testified that all of this was no secret, that other top White House officials who have refused to testify were well aware of what Trump wanted, including Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and even Vice President Mike Pence, which Pence's office denies. Democrats say Sondland's testimony backs up the central issue here. But Republicans were all not so fast. They were quick to question Sondland's credibility and assumptions, pointing out that Trump himself never gave Sondland inappropriate demands. And when grilled about it, Sondland admitted it was his understanding, his, quote, own presumption. And later, President Trump said that basically exonerates him. But Democrats pushed back again, saying, of course, Trump did not flat out ask for what they call bribery. And that is just a couple of the key moments and arguments from yesterday. Two other people also testified, and we have two more to go today, which are the last scheduled witnesses in this investigation. It all starts up again at 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. 10 leading Democratic presidential candidates took the stage last night for the fifth Democratic debate. And right away, they were questioned on the impeachment investigation into President Trump. In fact, NBC News reports that's one topic that got the candidates to unite. They went after Trump more times than any of them attacked each other combined. But they did still attack each other's policies on issues like health care and taxes. Some candidates once again criticized Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders' plan for Medicare for All. Mayor Pete Buttigieg said no matter how Warren rolls it out, it would divide the country. Former Vice President Joe Biden said he'd rather see Obamacare expanded. Senator Amy Klobuchar went after Buttigieg, saying he talks a big game but doesn't have enough experience. Another tense exchange was between Representative Tulsi Gabbard and Senator Kamala Harris about what the Democratic Party stands for. Gabbard said she wants to rebuild the party to better connect with struggling Americans. But Senator Harris said it was unfortunate that Gabbard spends so much time criticizing Democrats on Fox News. There was also a debate between candidates about taxes, with Senator Cory Booker saying Warren's plan to tax the ultra-wealthy has not worked in other countries. It wasn't all critical, though. As the Wall Street Journal points out, entrepreneur Andrew Yang thanked billionaire Tom Steyer for spending millions of dollars on fighting climate change. The next debate is next month. So far, only six candidates have qualified for that one. Across the pond, a rare shakeup with the royal family. The BBC reports Britain's Prince Andrew is stepping back from his royal duties. The reason? More fallout from that BBC interview he did over the weekend, where he tried to defend his friendship with sex offender Jeffrey Epstein, and it did not go over well. Now Prince Andrew says the scandal has become a major disruption to the royal family, so he's asked to step back for the foreseeable future. Look, up tonight, you may get a glimpse of the rare so-called unicorn meteor storm. Astronomers tell USA Today there's no guarantee that this meteor outburst will actually happen, but there is a good chance. And if it does, it'll be a pretty big deal. CNN says this kind of meteor shower happens around this time every year, but this year, it could be a lot bigger than normal, with at least 100 meteors visible within just 15 minutes. That has not happened since 1995. In the U.S., you may not be able to see it that well if you're on the West Coast, and cloud cover in the Midwest may make it tough, but those in the Southeast may get the best view just before midnight Eastern time. As for the unicorn name, the faint constellation that these meteors come from is Monoceros, which is the Greek word for unicorn. A quick break now for today's sponsor. Genopallette analyzes your genetics to help you eat healthier. Using a DNA analysis, Genopallette determines things like whether it's best for you to eat a low or high carb diet, or if your body needs higher intake of specific nutrients than other people, like vitamin D or magnesium. I learned, for example, I have a higher chance of being more sensitive to gluten than I realized. It even includes a personalized food map, including 85 foods that are healthiest for you based on your DNA. So to learn more and get your report, go to genopallette.com. And remember, if you've already provided your DNA to something like Ancestry, you can just upload that same data from them to get your report in a few quick steps. Just use the code NEWSWORTHY and you can get 20% off your report. That's genopallette.com, spelled G-E-N-O-P-A-L-A-T-E, genopallette.com with the code NEWSWORTHY for 20% off your report. Now back to the news. Google has now joined Twitter in revising its rules for political ads, saying highly targeted political ads trying to go after certain demographics will no longer be allowed, and the company would take action against clearly false claims in ads. It seems like a stricter stance than Facebook is taking on political ads, but it doesn't go quite as far as Twitter, which has said it's banning political ads altogether. Of course, Google's ad policy affects what appears in search, display ads online, and YouTube. And it's been an issue of concern on Capitol Hill ahead of the 2020 election. PayPal is making its biggest purchase yet. It's acquiring the deal-finding service Honey for about $4 billion. CNBC says Honey is best known as a browser extension tool that automatically searches for and applies coupon codes online. PayPal, which also owns Venmo, says Honey's technology will help it reach more consumers as they begin their online shopping journey. Uber is reportedly going to start recording audio during rides as part of a safety feature, but they say they won't record you without your permission. You do have to opt in. And if you do okay the recording, Uber will ask you how the ride went at the end of your trip. If something went wrong, the recording will be sent to the authorities and will act as proof. CNET says in the past few years, hundreds of Uber passengers and drivers have said they've been assaulted, harassed, or worse during rides. So this is meant to help document any issues or attacks. Uber is going to start testing this feature in Latin America next month and does plan to test it in the U.S. soon. But because drivers may also be able to record, privacy experts say Uber may run into some problems in the U.S. since there are different state laws about when you're allowed to record. Stay tuned. Grammy nominations are in. Pop R&B singer Lizzo led the pack with 8 nominations. Pop singer Billie Eilish and country rapper Lil Nas X also got 6 nominations apiece. Variety says all 3 singers are first-time Grammy nominees. Ariana Grande is also up for 5 awards, including Record of the Year, Album of the Year, and Best Pop Vocal Album. The Grammys are in January 2020 and will be hosted for the 2nd year in a row by Alicia Keys. But first up, the American Music Awards this Sunday on ABC. And that's it for the main news today, but now it's time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we actually have 2 great guests to help us deal with the sometimes heated political conversations that can come up during family gatherings, like on Thanksgiving in 1 week. In fact, Pew Research found more than half, 53% of Americans, find talking about politics with people they disagree with is stressful and frustrating. And I know many of you who listen to this show are sick of the political fighting. So how can we have better conversations and why does it matter? You'll hear from Peter Coleman, who has spent years researching difficult political conversations. He's a professor of psychology at Columbia University and the author of the upcoming book, The Way Out: How to Overcome Toxic Polarization in Politics and in Life. But first, we start with Beth Silvers. She's a co-host of the Pantsuit Politics podcast and a co-author of the book, I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening. She shares her research and personal experience. Hi, Beth. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Thanks for inviting me. I love your show.
So a lot of people going into Thanksgiving probably feel like they just want to avoid politics altogether, or they know that it's going to be a fight no matter what, especially with a couple glasses of wine. So first, how do you think we got here? What makes it so intense in America today?
I think that marketing is really how we got here. The world is so complicated, and we have needed the parties for a long time to be shorthand for us because we can't think about the details of trade policy when we're trying to be parents and work full time and participate in our communities. And so we've used the parties as shorthand. And I think the parties have recognized that, and individual politicians have recognized it. And so they approach us now more like consumers than constituents. And when you start reducing everything to stay brand loyal, we lose a lot of focus on what really matters, and particularly on our values. And because we know how to be brand loyal in the context of team sports and what shoes we buy, we bring that same kind of sort of unfiltered passion to our political discussions, even in our families and our homes.
So I know from your book that you feel that embracing these tough political conversations can actually help with that. Why?
Well, our thesis is that because we have stopped having real conversation about politics, we avoid these discussions because they can be really miserable, that we've forgotten how to do it and we've lost the value in disagreement. We've lost the ability to work on each other as fellow citizens in a democracy. And if we want all of that back, we have to start doing it again, taking responsibility for it in our homes and our families and our communities and getting better at it.
So I think what we sometimes see in today's world is this connection, maybe an assumption, that a political belief is directly correlated with that person's, with that person being good or bad overall. Do you see that happening, and how do we handle that part of it?
Yes, and I think the key to handling that is the patience to unhook things and take them apart and go a little bit deeper. Why is this important to you? How did you come to believe that? What sources of information are you using when you arrive at that opinion? And reinforcing, we are gathering with people because we have some relationship with them, and that relationship can be prioritized even when we start to wade into political territory where we know we're going to have strong disagreement.
So let's talk about the practical tips of how do you have that conversation when you know that you disagree? What should we be keeping in mind?
Well, the first thing is that I am not going to be able to give you tips to convince people to agree with you. If we had that book, I'm sure it would be a bestseller. But what we emphasize is that as we're gathering with people, the conversation is the point. We're not trying to draft legislation with them. We are not trying to confirm judges. We're not trying to all agree on a candidate to support. All we're trying to do is better understand ourselves and the people we're gathering with. So if you can set a goal of just being curious, learning something about yourself or others in the conversation, then you're going to progress a lot farther in a good, healthy discussion as opposed to a debate.
Can you give us an example of a situation maybe that you've been in where you've had to apply this?
Yes. There are people that I care very much about who have strong views on immigration that are very different from mine. And those views can occasionally veer into territory that I find really harmful and toxic. And so it's important to me to say things like, you know, the way that you're talking about immigrants right now is really inconsistent with the way that I've heard you talk about other people and the way that I've seen you help people who are strangers to you who needed it. And I just want to understand why that seeming incongruence exists. And it kind of says to people, I love you. I know who you are. And I don't get this. Help me understand.
How did that end? I mean, do you feel like that you both kind of came to a better understanding?
I don't know that we both came to a better understanding, but I know that it didn't turn into fireworks. And what I heard back is a little bit of softening around the language being used and still a very firm position about the policy at issue. But I also think that we gave each other things to consider, and we'll come back and have that discussion again. And that's really the point. Let's not agree to disagree and leave it all. Let's say, thanks for talking with me about this. Let's do it again sometime.
Anything else you want to add as part of this conversation and this issue?
We talk in our book about keeping politics in its place, and I think that's especially important as these gatherings come up in such a heated political season. I do want people to talk about this in their homes. I don't think our lawmakers can be more civil toward one another if we can't love each other through disagreement in our families. I also think this should not take over your gatherings. You know, you have to keep relationships fueled by where we have things in common, things to celebrate, things that we all love. So get into it and then get out of it and promise to do it again, but don't let it become the whole time together.
And now let's turn to Dr. Peter Coleman, who shares what his research has shown on this topic. And I ask him, is there hope Americans will become a little less divided? Hi, Peter. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
My pleasure.
So can you explain some of the research you've done, what that looks like, and what you found from it that actually works to resolve conflict?
Sure. I'll give you, a couple of main points. We've run this project called the Difficult Conversations Lab for about 15 years, as I said, and where we bring people who are opposed on some moral issue. It might be abortion, it might be pro-Trump and anti-Trump voters, it might be climate change and climate change deniers. So we bring people in who have opposing views on an issue, and then we ask them to sit and have conversations where they try to reach some kind of consensus understanding on the issue. And then what we study are the conditions where things go well or where things get stuck and angry and really have to either be stopped or just people sort of walk out. And what we've learned are a few things. So one is that, you know, if you're dealing with a deep hotbed issue such as Trump represents in America today, then these are different issues than most of the disputes and conflicts we have in our life. They are symbolic, they're deep, they're meaningful, and they're connected to a lot of our sense of identity and our sense of what's important in our values. And so they're not typically negotiable in a traditional sense, though, where people can kind of sort of sit down and work them out. So that's one point. Just know that these kinds of conflicts can be very different from most. But another is knowing your intentions. If you go to Thanksgiving dinner and, you know, your intention is to sort of challenge your uncle who has an opposite point of view from you and really show that you're right and you want to sort of take him down, if that's your true intention, then who am I to say don't do it? You know, people have different kinds of dynamics in their families. But if we really want to learn from each other, it requires what we call dialogue, which is really just listening to people. Not to undermine them, not to find flaws in their argument, but to really understand, to try to gain an understanding of what's happening for them and ultimately what's happening for us, because many of us haven't really sat with why we feel and think the way we do on these issues. One other thing that I'll say is that what we've learned from our research is that how these conversations begin are very important. And the first comments that people make, the attitudes that they come in with, you know, how they frame the conversation, questions that they ask, those things can matter in very significant ways in terms of the direction the conversation takes.
Is there hope for America to feel less partisan? How do we get more people to have those calmer conversations?
Really good question. I do think there is hope. I do not think it's hopeless. One of the reasons we feel so hopeless is that the more extreme voices out there on the media or in our lives are just noisier and they get more attention. And so we really think that these divides are strong and, you know, insurmountable. But there was a recent study that came out by a group called More in Common, and they identified that there's about 67% of Americans today or more that really are exhausted. They're kind of fed up with the vitriol and the hostility and the dysfunction, and they really just want to find ways to work with the other side and to move us forward. And so there is a large population, you know, 67% is significant, that are willing to sort of do something different. And the trick is knowing, you know, what to do. And that's what our research is about. I have a new book coming out in 2020 called The Way Out. I do think whatever happens to Donald Trump's presidency, this divide preceded him, it will continue or be exacerbated after him. And we really have to deal with the sort of deeper fissures in our society in order to move forward.
And you can learn more about both of our guests today and their books, and even see a tip sheet on this topic in today's show notes. That's also where you'll find the sources and links to all the stories mentioned. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and find today's date. Thank you so much for listening. If you found this interesting, please consider sharing it and passing along the information. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 a.m. every weekday. We'll chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.